Okay, great. Looks like we're set. So my plan was just going to read the screen so that it's recorded on our audio recording. This will not be posted with a video. It's just posted as audio. So for the record, and you can answer if you want, but you can just wave if you want to. Those in attendance at the WFEDD meeting on April 27th are Alan Rindlisbacher,
here.
Abby Osborne, Guy Letender, Linda Towns, Mark Nold, Holland Wilbanks. Is it Julie Fisher? Okay. And someone on their iPhone that I can't read. Mayor Dan Doy, Chris Sloan, Commissioner Bob Stevenson, Mayor Debbie Wynn, Darren Brush, Commissioner Sean Milne, Paul Hacking, Thomas Wadsworth, let's see, Sylvia Castro, Chris Williams, who is Stephanie?
Stephanie McCarthy, the DDA.
Thank you. Okay. And Rochelle Custer. And is it Kent Anderson?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Okay. Scott Parson, Councilmember Mike Newton, Rob Sant, Ben Hart. Let's see. And then various other staff members from WFRC and other agencies. If you'd like to have your name recorded in the minutes and I did not call you, please type it into the chat and we'll make sure that you're recorded for the minutes. Thank you.
I also just note, I saw Commissioner Stevenson was here.
Yeah.
And then did he disappear?
Yeah, he's back.
Okay.
All right, Andrew, thank you very much. So the time is 1:34 and we will begin the meeting of the Wasatch Front Regional Council Economic Development District. Our first item is to review two sets of minutes from our previous meetings held on January 27th and February 27th. They were sent out about 5 days ago. I think they were in your inbox on Friday. So we just need a motion and a second on the first one from February 22nd. And then a motion and a second on the January 27th. So if we can start with the motion for the minutes for February 27th. Anyone?
So moved. Seconded.
I'm sorry, can you please state your names?
Yep, thank you.
Bob Stevenson.
Sean Mill.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for the February 27th. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Great. I'll move that motion passes unanimously. I'll take a motion for the January 27th. Please say your name when you make the motion.
So moved, Bob Stevenson.
And a second?
I'll second. This is Mike Newton.
Thanks, Mike. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Wonderful. Thanks, everyone. It's a little weird on this, but thanks for accommodating that so that we'll make the motion that passed unanimously. So next item on the agenda is a chair's report. So Scott and Andrew asked that I just give you a quick little rundown of the legislative session, the special sessions, multiple, that's plural, that we had over the last few weeks. So I'll be quick here. They gave me 5 minutes, but I definitely don't need 5 minutes for the chair's report. It was our first virtual session. We got together two Thursdays ago and then last Thursday, and we actually did two different general or special sessions, one called by the legislature, which was the first time we ever used that authority to call ourselves into special session. And then we concluded with an afternoon session called by the governor last Thursday. The COVID-19 response was the main general direction that the legislative session went into. We did everything from accepting the federal funds to passing a bunch of policy items related to COVID-19 and some other resolutions, you know, thanking our frontline workers and also calling for anybody that got a budget appropriation in the last general session to hold off on budgeting that or spending that as we work to likely cut budgets in June. We then went into a governor's called special session where we had four items on the call. Three of them not related to COVID. They were veto overrides that we negotiated. And one was related to COVID, allowing bar licenses to be delayed from June until August. So it was pretty eventful few days. It was before everybody got on. It was a little, I've described how it was a little surreal being in the chamber with just, you know, 10 IT folks and the speaker and I, and watching our 75 members from the comfort of their homes, you know, conduct a legislative session and spend millions of dollars from their kitchen tables and their couches. So it really went off without a hitch. NCSL, which is the national state legislative group, was there watching. We were the first state to actually do this virtually. We plan on being in another special session sometime at the end of May, beginning of June. Like I said, to address the budget for 2021 and also figure out how we allocate the local money that we got from the Fed. So we got about $325 million of local money that we need to figure out how we're going to distribute. That's not Salt Lake County or Utah County money. Theirs was directed from the Treasury independently of going through the state because they are over 500,000 in population. So they have their money already appropriated to them. So a lot of strings attached with this money. The state as a whole got $1.25 billion from the feds. A lot of strings attached, all COVID related. We cannot backfill budgets with this money. So anything lost over the last 54 days, that's really how long we've been in this process. We cannot backfill any budgets with that money. It's all COVID related. So a lot more to come out in the next few months as we continue to move through this crazy time. The governor is going to make an announcement tomorrow. I don't want to get ahead of him too much on this, but it's really a direction for how we move into the next phase. So right now we're in the urgent phase. And that's really the red phase is what we're calling it. This next phase is the stabilization phase. When we rolled out the Utah Leads Together plan back in early April, the urgent phase lasted anywhere between 8 to 12 weeks. May 8th will be 8 weeks. He'll make an announcement tomorrow that will kind of lay out the next steps of where we see us moving into the stabilization phase. And that color is orange. And then we have colors of yellow and green. Green is full recovery, which is a long ways out still. I'll just say this as an editorial comment. We're doing really well. For being one of seven states that didn't fully shelter in place, it's been an incredible process of what we've been able to do. Numbers are very good, and our testing is off the charts. I don't know if you've been reading the daily test charts, but the last 2 days we've been over 6,000. That's been quite incredible because it's not people think that they're in those 6,000 are not just people that think they're infected. We're actually randomizing the tests now, so you could get a call anytime from the state that just asks you, even with no symptoms, to please go get tested because we want to make sure where these hot spots are popping up, and We'll then start to transition into antibody testing as well. So a lot to come between now and when we move to the yellow phase, but look for an announcement tomorrow in the afternoon from the governor on moving into the stabilization phase. I'm happy to take any questions really quickly about any of that if anyone has any. If not, we can keep moving on through the agenda, but I'll pause there for a minute if anyone has any questions.
And during the meeting, one effective way to ask questions will be to use the chat function. And I'd also like to recognize that Commissioner Froer was able to join us on the call.
Oh, wonderful.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Sorry I was late. Just got a little involved in another meeting. Thanks for hosting this, Abby. That's great.
Absolutely. Scott, there is, and item number three is public comment. I don't know how we do that in this setting. So do we just skip that? Do we allow? tell me how this works.
Yeah, we could allow, there are 44 participants on the call, and this does go out and is noticed to members, alternates, as well as others. So if anybody would like to address the board, they're welcome to, and they can, raise hand or make mention in the group chat, and we can call on them, but certainly want to provide that as an opportunity.
Very good. Thanks, Scott. So as Scott just described, if there's anyone from the public, now is your opportunity to address the board and give any public comment. I'm not seeing any in the chat or any of the raising hands, so I'll move that public comment closes. Moving on to item number four, COVID-19, looking forward to recovery. We actually have three guests today that are going to be taking time to walk through.
You might think this is interesting. Let's see who they are.
Walking through what's going on. We're going to start with Ben Hart from the Governor's Office of Economic Development. He and I had a great conversation this morning and doing some incredible amount of work. So, Ben, we will turn it over to you for a time if you're on. Does anyone see Ben?
I am on. Can you guys see me okay?
Wonderful. There you are. Thank you.
Of course. Well, no, just went in where I was getting a little bit better Wi-Fi service. I'm looking for that spot in the house. So thank you for the invitation. And Abby, I know you have been really, really busy. For those who don't know the role that Abby plays up the legislature, I think everyone does, but it's huge. And so the last two weeks with the special sessions going on, she has just been amazing. And I think our state is indebted to her and owes her a lot. And so, Abby, thank you for all you're doing. Hopefully you're getting some well-needed rest and R&R. And so I am going to ask for the deference and the indulgence of the group here. I'm actually going to tag team this with Tom Wadsworth, who is in our office. And so from the GoEd response, what we see happening here as the state begins to open up, I know there's a lot of us who are on daily calls almost every hour at this point in terms of what does this look like. We're reading a lot of the national headlines. We see states that are running and gunning, ready to open up, Georgia. We see Sweden that never shut down technically, quote unquote. And then we see a lot of places all over the world. Some examples give us a lot of hope. Some examples give us a little bit of fear and a little bit of reticence as we begin to open up. But the reality is we have to do it. We have an economy that depends on the movement of goods and services and tech and aerospace, defense, life sciences, and all of the above. And so we have to move forward in a way that is safe, respectful of the data that is out there and the guidance from our healthcare professionals. And so I'm comfortable that Governor Herbert, Speaker Wilson, Lieutenant Governor Cox, President Adams are doing a lot of counseling together. I know they're working with local governments trying to find the right pace and the right ways to do this. And so I think the Utah Leads 2.0 plan is definitely indicative of that. By the way, that's been copied all across the country now and even at the federal level. And so kudos to our state leaders for being able to put that together. And so I think a lot of people understand what our office and our role is in all of this. We help to really help businesses. And so we partner and hopefully we're the arm of the state that can work with business in whatever part of the state it's in. Small business, large business, tech business, whatever. And so we've had our bridge programs. Thank you to Abby and the legislature. We're going to be working with the rental assistance program that's going to be coming online. And so our response in all of this has just been really taking the guidance that's given to us from the legislature, the governor, and being able to try and implement those good things. And so the bridge program, we help more than 1,000 businesses. The rental assistance program, that's going to be 4,000 businesses. That is a tremendous help. So kudos again to the legislature and their foresight to be able to put a program like that together. So we are kind of at the head of a lot of this stuff. We're moving out. I would like to give some time to Tom. He has been in the weeds working a lot of this stuff, and he's been kind of on the front line with a lot of these companies. He's got some great insights. The pipeline, I would have thought, would have slowed down, especially for new recruitments, expansions, but it doesn't seem like that's the case. It seems like people are still realizing we're going to have to be open after this is over. That's definitely positive news. So Tom, I don't know if you want to jump in.
Yeah, happy to. Insights. And I think I'll probably reference some of the questions, Scott, that you had sent over previously. I know Ben talked about the Utah Leads Together plan that's been out. And I think that's really the best model we should look at. One thing that I think we're seeing and are encouraging communities and businesses to look at is everyone, and particularly the news, like to talk about the economy as this binary object where you're either open or you're closed. And the great model that's been put out by our state is that it allows for some middle ground there and some trial and error. And so you're going to see that coming online, and we would encourage communities and businesses to do the same type of thing. Start to do what you can. And if you see something that is concerning, you can scale it back over time, but it's not a binary decision about being open and closed. And I think that's extremely important. One of the questions that Scott had mentioned is how do we work together to open businesses regionally? And I think that's extremely important in Utah, given that the majority of our residents live along the Wasatch Front, which really acts as one giant metro union rather than, you know, individual counties. But I think what we need to do is we need to look and understand what your neighbors are doing. I know that, and maybe you've seen some of the stories on what's happening on kind of the border between Salt Lake and Utah County, as those two counties have different restrictions and things like that. And it's important for us to recognize that what you do doesn't just impact your citizens, but it impacts everybody that passes through you. So understanding what the movement of people and business looks like in your community, and understanding logistics, commuting patterns, and things like that, to make sure that there's some form of consistency around what regional economies are doing. And then understanding what those impacts might look like on your economy. Something else I wanted us to address is how does work from home change business going forward? I think that's something we're all kind of learning on the fly. It's probably too soon to tell. I think I saw it on Twitter that somebody said, whoever thinks that this COVID-19 pandemic is going to be the kickstart from the work from home revolution doesn't have kids. And I think that's probably accurate. I think you're going to see, I think there's a bunch of different scenarios we could see. I think we could see a back to normal, and I put normal in quotation marks, type of scenario. I think we've heard that you could see increased office footprints going forward to account for more social distancing type scenarios. The last 10 years have really been a push towards kind of the open concept, particularly in the tech sector, because you can cram a bunch of people into a smaller footprint. We could see that changing, where you're going to see larger footprints, maybe more closed off offices, maybe not so much the communal type working that we've seen. That's an option that's out there. You could also see a decreased footprint, where companies recognize, hey, we work from home pretty well. Maybe we don't need as much space, and you have shifts of workers that come in a couple of days a week. There's been a number of companies who said they're going to make significant pushes within their company to eliminate office space that way. I think, you know, in Utah, this is going to be interesting as well. If we do go to more work from home, you may see larger needs for more square footage in terms of homes, right? I, a lot of people have been working from their kitchen or from their bedrooms or from whatever, but does it, do we move into a place where there's demand for an additional room for an office? And how does that play into housing affordability and all of those things that we've talked about have been constraints on our economy historically? And then I think we look at, you know, if we are seeing fewer trips to the office, what does that mean in terms of transit amenities? There's been a big push for transit-oriented development historically. If you're only going into the office 2 days a week, is that as necessary as it has been in the future? Is it more necessary than it's been in the future? I think there's a lot of things that are to be seen, but in terms of housing affordability, is an hour commute, if you're only making that twice a week, is that more bearable than it was if you were commuting 5 days a week or so? And so I think there's a lot to be seen. I think a lot of it is industry dependent. Obviously, you can't manufacture things from home, but particularly in professional services, there probably is a lot that can be done. Ben, anything you want to add there?
Yeah, just a few points I was thinking about as we were talking through this, and also some of the other dynamics that are happening. But I think for so many CEOs, and we heard a lot of this right at the beginning of the pandemic, we heard the almost obligatory, look, we don't like our employees working from home. We can't wait till we get back in the office. And the phone calls and the Zooms and what everything else I've been on, there's been just this slight change over the last few weeks, and it's been very subtle. But we hear more and more people saying, you know, working from home is not the end of the world. And this is one of the issues I know Abby has been really dialed into over the last several years. But how do we take cars off the road during commutes? Think of how much more efficient you make our freeway systems, growth, everything else, air pollution. Like, there was this dark place with work from home, and people thought it was terrible, it was evil. This kind of forced that conversation a little bit. And I think it's opened up a lot of eyes for people to be able to say, you know what, in some cases, I might actually get better productivity from some of my people who are working from home. And so we've heard that from a number of people, and I heard it from a very prominent CEO not that long ago. And so I think people are going to be looking at that. I hope it is. I think it's a better quality of life. I think even the kids, and sometimes I have to run from room to room to find my quiet place. But in spite of that, I think you can kind of make arrangements. And to Tom's point as well, I think he said this well, but I love the 2.0 plan because regional allowability, I don't know if that's a word, but it allows regions to kind of look at what they need, and they can then open up their area based on what they're seeing. And so, you know, Governor Herbert said it in the press conference Friday or Thursday, I can't remember what day that was, but he said, you know, some areas they're going to want to stay orange, some areas they're going to be ready for yellow. And so it allows for counties to kind of do what they need to do. And I love how responsive the governments have been. Davis County, when they saw, you know, an uptick, they closed things down and it flattened the curve. I mean, it really did have an impact. But then you saw them loosen things up a little bit. And so I think people in Utah are getting through this better than anywhere else. And I'm really hopeful that consumer confidence, because I believe a lot of this is consumer confidence coming out of this. If consumer confidence is high with those of us who've remained employed and we still have cash coming in, we're willing to go out to eat maybe a couple more times a month. Maybe we're willing to stay in state and go on vacation. Like, we're going to get through this really well, and we're going to minimize that impact to those few industries. If consumer confidence isn't back, people don't want to buy the house, the car, whatever it is, then we're going to see that multiplier effect. And so I think consumer confidence is just going to be huge coming out of this. So, Madam Chair, that is our report.
That's great. Thanks, Team GoEd. They're doing some great stuff. We gave them a lot of responsibility this past session, as Ben kind of alluded to. So it's good things going to come out of, more good things going to come out of their office from some of the federal grant money as well. Alan, you're here for EDC Utah. And if you want to give us an update on what's going on in your office, what you guys are doing, and okay. Time is yours, my friend.
happy to do that. I also brought a few slides I'll put up and see if I can make this transition here to share my screen. And is it there? Are you seeing my screen?
We are not. There we go. Now we see it.
Now you are. There you go. I think EC Utah with the state and working with Department of Workforce Services as well. I think that the GOED team has engaged us. We're actively involved to supporting them with the state program. I know that we've had three or four of our team working very closely with the GOED team approving applications for the state bridge loan program. Also, I think we've had one or two folks on the ready response team answering questions, the bigger questions about the federal programs and so forth. So I think we're all learning. We're doing things in a different way as we go forward in this pandemic. Let me share, here are the Mike Flynn key performance indicators that he typically shows as we talk about in our regular meetings with the economic, with our investor partners. But so far, so good. Things are moving along relatively well. You see from those indicators, the previous year's jobs created. The project wins. Now, realizing these are fiscal year numbers where we end June 30th, so we still have a little bit of room to grow. I saw another announcement this morning. I think we had two or three wins from that will be announced this coming week, Thomas, as a result of some EdTIF dollars and so forth. But project wins.
Alan, are these numbers through the end of March? So
no, these are through the end of March. That's correct.
End of March. So
we still have April, May, June. We still have the last quarter of the year to go. And the capital investment holding pretty close to last year, and also square footage along the same route. Now here's one that shows a little bit more life currently where we're standing. You look at new project starts from last previous year, and the green bar then of course is this current fiscal year. I think at the end of April we're going to show, I think we're at about 12 or 13 starts, new project starts. So actually the month of April wasn't bad in and of itself. Based upon the current pandemic. And then we'll wait to see what happens with May and June. Let me only suggest that, and maybe this is the appropriate time, that I share some thoughts from a recent site selection. I scribbled some notes this morning, so bear with me as I read through some notes from the Site Selection Guild. This is the organization that came to the state of Utah with us last year. Those top site selectors, the companies and so forth, that are part of that organization. They did a survey the week of April 13th with their members, and they show that 81% of their membership said, obviously, that COVID-19 will have a major impact upon global supply chain strategies. And many predict an uptick in onshoring to US, Canada, and Mexico. We're going to see some changes in the way business has been done in the country, according to these site selectors. They also suggested the workforce, the work from home experiment. Now, Ben and Thomas, as you suggest, the survey suggests that the work from home experiment will change the footprint of office real estate. Now, how's that going to happen? Is it the fact that we're going to have to send more people home to work, as we've already talked about, or social distancing? Are we going to still use the same amount of space, but just put less people in that space while more people stay at home to work? I think that it will change the dynamic of corporate real estate, and it'll be interesting to watch. From the survey, 72% believe the rise in remote workers will have a major impact on how work is done in the future. So there's a specific number to that. Now, Thomas Wadsworth is going to like this number. 52% of site selection projects have been paused. That's 52% less time than Thomas Wadsworth is going to have to deal with us and our EDC Utah staff dealing with him and his EdTIF program. So Thomas, 52% chance you're going to see less of us. I'm not supposed
to. That's disappointing. That's disappointing, Alan.
Okay, I'm not supposed to make fun of difficult situations. 45% of projects are moving forward. 55% predict that companies will restart expansions or additions to new facilities in the fourth quarter. And 45% of those site selectors suggest it will be until 2021, into the year 2021, before that activity will pick back up. So that's that suggests that there will be a pause in what we're doing. Last comments from that survey, hot industries, life sciences, logistics, and advanced manufacturing. That all fits very well with me with what we're seeing, how the economy is changing as a result of COVID-19. Warehouse production will be the most active functions that we'll see here in the short term. Obviously, supply chain changes, I think, impacts that reasoning. And the site selection survey advice to economic development organizations. And I think this is critical for all of us. We need to continue to communicate actively with companies and consultants because they're going through the same changes that the rest of us are as well. Uncertainty, new dynamics. Let me change slide. There's a week over week new project start trends. You can see exactly where we are. And then of course we don't have the latest last week on that as we end up wrapping up this month. But you can see that even in spite of COVID-19, we're still seeing some activity. There's new projects coming in, which gives us a little bit of encouragement. What are we doing? I've already mentioned that we're right in the thick of things with Governor's Office of Economic Development. Teresa Foxley is playing a key role on the Economic Response Task Force. Mentioned that we've had others involved with the GOED. The Unified Command, Stephanie Froman from our staff took a key role, and she's been working, she just calls it PPE all the time, working to work with Utah-based companies to have them pivot towards from current production to production of masks and gowns, et cetera, et cetera. And then a community resources compilation from my department in community strategy. We've worked to keep this updated website page open. We've asked our public sector members throughout the state to continue to give us best practices, lessons learned, so that we could share this with other economic developers throughout the state to go to our website and see what the latest hot ticket is that we've put on there to share with everybody around the state. We've also tried to maintain some normalcy. I believe that all of us are a little bit concerned about the uncertainty. So programs that I'm involved with, the training programs with our economic developers throughout the state, we've continued on. We're now doing virtual training online. Instead of we taking our RFI training or our site selection training or our incentive training programs out to the people, we're simply conducting those RFI or those training sessions now virtually. We did one on April the 9th. It was successful. We did a site selection event last week on the 22nd. We have an incentives training scheduled for May the 14th, all virtual. I think generally those are the things that we're involved with. The team is engaged and involved, and we're just looking for new ways to do things in this new world. Any questions? Oh, there's a slide. I forgot a couple slides. There's the personal protective equipment numbers that Stephanie has been working with the team throughout the state. Any questions?
Any questions for Alan?
Grateful for the partnership with everybody that's on this line, whether from the local level, regional level, state. I think we're all just buckling down and doing what we can to move forward.
That's right, Alan. Well said. All right, I don't see any questions for Alan, so we're going to move on to Department of Workforce Services, Mark Nold. They are incredibly busy. I know Mark's probably got a little bit of time to spend with us today because they have more cases than they had in 2018 and 2019 combined right now. So it's incredible amount of work that they're doing. So Mark, you're on. I see you there. The time is yours, my friend.
Did the share work?
Yes.
Okay. You can see a PowerPoint presentation?
Yes.
Okay. Most of what has been said has been on the positive note. So I feel like a fish out of water because I'm going to show you the negative side of this whole thing in terms of how it's hitting the economy and so on. We did a press release a couple weeks ago. That was for March. We work with the Bureau of Labor Statistics and national government, and they're the ones who crunch the numbers. We just be the voice and the face of it in the state of Utah. The unfortunate part about that was timing. The BLS only measures the economy basically during one pay period of the year or of the month, excuse me. The whatever pay period includes the 12th day of the month is the measurement time period. And unfortunately, that was the beginning of March, whereas the stay-at-home orders started in the second half of March. So it largely missed the entire rapid closure of the economy and rapid job losses. So the only thing I have to work with between now and the next press release, which will be May 20th, which will speak then to April, which is going to be the heart and soul of the downturn here, the initial claims data that comes into our department. And so what you see here is percentage of all the claims coming in by the various industry sectors. As people report where they got laid off from, and then they get coded in various industries. Unfortunately, a lot of them are unclassified, which is over on the far right-hand side. But it shouldn't surprise anybody that what's out in front and leading is the accommodation and food services industries. So this is not only all the restaurants, but hotels, and industry that's very social interaction. Foundation, the same thing with the healthcare industry. That actually was a bit of a surprise. You'd think healthcare would be going full bore and actually looking for more workers, but a lot of the healthcare is, it's not critical, so to speak. It's, just doctor's visits. You can shut down the dental offices. You can shut down a lot of the healthcare activities. It's very social interactive in terms of how it's set up. People have to be examined, and there's a lot of close contact. But so if it's not critical, it was put on hold. The retail trade sector is also, shouldn't be surprised that that was hit very hard when you're going to close Nordstrom's and Macy's and the retail activities that don't, it's good for Amazon's, but big box and so on, this is not helping them at all. And they're already in a Amazon environment that's been contracting and hitting their industry. The administrative support there would be like the help supply industry, temporary workers, that kind of stuff. They're very easy to just let go. And they're probably going to be very slow to bring them back. And then you can see the other ones there, even manufacturing has got some presence in terms of the percent of all the claims that have come in by the various industry sectors. You're going to turn it into an occupational profile. That would be here. Again, it shouldn't surprise you that big one in the middle is the food preparation and serving related occupations. Then there's office and administrative support, sales and related activities, management activities, healthcare. You kind of see the various distributions. You can also see areas like the professional and technical services here for business and financial, computers, architecture, and so on. They are not being hit in very high volumes. Fortunately, the curve has turned on the quantity of initial claims coming into our office. So the worst of the layoffs are over, unless there's another wave that would come. But again, I'm looking at these various industries, and this is how this slide would play out. If a particular industry had 10% of the entire employment base, and it had 10% of all the initial claims coming in, then it would be proportionately hit. So 100% proportionality would mean that the amount of initial claims, their percent of initial claims, equals their percent within the economy. And you can see, I don't think you're surprised by the accommodation of food services being 2.5 times harder hit than other industries. The other services, which has a lot of haircuts, nail salons, a lot of the personal interaction services, twice as heavily hit, the entertainment, the business services, rentals, retail trade. It reiterates what was there in that first slide. But even then, only 16% of the pre-COVID accommodation and food services employment has come in and filed for initial unemployment claim, only 14% of other services, only 13% of entertainment industry. We know that the, even your, you know, just common sense or logic would tell you that a lot more of that employment, you know, something more along the lines of 60 to 70% of the food service industry could easily be idled right now, or the entertainment industry with all the theaters and all kinds of things shut down and so on. So there's always some kind of, well, here's the distribution who has come in and filed for claims, but as the next slide shows, the percentage of people who file for unemployment historically is a very low percentage of the total people who are unemployed. It's spiky here, looks like a heartbeat because of seasonalities. Winters are higher and the summers are lower. But if you kind of draw a trend line through there, it's anywhere from 20 to 25% of all people unemployed file for unemployment insurance claims. The only environment where you had a lot of employment layoffs or job losses would be back in over there on the left in the Great Recession period. And at highest, it was 45% of all unemployment came in and filed for an unemployment insurance claim. So again, whatever volume is coming into the unemployment insurance system and moves on and continues being a continued claim, there is some percentage higher than that that is the actual job loss. If I was to take the basic 130,000 people that have come in and filed for unemployment claims and divide that by 0.45, your job loss is up around 260 some thousand jobs, is what that would translate into. We've made some estimations on the April employment decline. You can, we're estimating like the entertainment industry would actually have something possibly over 70 to 80% job loss. Food services around 65% or so. Accommodations, you can see some of the various industries in terms of what we think is their current overall employment losses. A lot of this was predicated on the working off of the initial claims data that it comes in by industry. If I was going to give you a picture of April in terms of the darker pumpkin colored bars there would be what we thought the economy would look like by industry without COVID. The yellow is what we feel it looks like in April with COVID. Again, around 260,000 job loss, if that would translate into about a 16 to 17% employment setback here in April. You can see again, leisure and hospitality, big declines. You get business services, you're gonna get them here in retail trade. Some of these other industries, all of them seem to have some, you know, setbacks, healthcare and so on. Public administration, again, government services, not so much, but there could be something down the road in terms of budget setbacks and loss of tax revenues and so on because of all of this activity that could get to here sometime in the future. So if you're gonna look at the employment contractions, I did this last week or so, but that was before the recent talk and hope that things might turn here in May, that they might start opening more of the economy. So if that's the case, we would anticipate this to be the low point and not here. But again, it's a lot of this is going to be like a stock market. It's very slippery in the fall and can be very sticky in terms of bringing back employment and opening things up. You know, some industries quicker than others, some of them much delay, some may come in stair step kind of situations and so on. But it's gonna, now let's assume that this doesn't come back, that we don't have a W and it does not come back in the fall and the winter, or we get some kind of vaccine or some hope or something, just pretend like it's not gonna happen next year. The entire measurement of the economy is messed up, so to speak, because the amount of job loss here, even if you have no overall job gain here, it's still going to be that much higher than this decline. So you're going to have trouble seeing the real economy here, and you're going to have trouble seeing the real economy here just because of these comparativeness and, you know, how what something that happened really bad one year can look, make things look really good the next year when you do get some improvements. Given the state of the various industries, we shared it down through the economies of the various county economies, and it shouldn't be surprising that you get these big increases down here in the southern Utah, heavily tourist and or Summit and Daggett kind of economies that are very tourism heavy, where you have the leisure and hospitality, the retail trade, those the entertainment industries, those are very big parts of their economy, but yet they're the most impacted industries. And so it's not surprising you get these large declines forecasted here for the county economies in April. When you do look at the amount of initial claims coming into the state and across the whole country, about 12% of the entire United States economy came in and filed for unemployment claims, whereas in Utah it was about 7 or 8%. I think there's several factors that are playing into this. I think one of it is our youthfulness. I think my own stepson, 28-year-old in the IT industry, says a lot of his friends don't even know what unemployment is. They never even heard of it. They don't know how to file for it. Or they didn't grow up with it. They grew up with, you know, this booming economy. Not really part of their psychic. Also, we're not a hotspot in terms of, you know, in relation to places like New York, New Orleans, or wherever, you know, the various, we have our cases and so on, but we're not considered to be a hotspot. And then I think you also get this employment distribution, which is being shown here on the screen. Now, this line is basically if an industry is on this line, its share of employment in the state of Utah is largely equal to its corresponding share of employment at the national level. So these are things that we call location quotients. And if, again, if it's at one, it's, for example, mining employment seems to be right around one. Well, no, excuse me, this one right here, the yellow in manufacturing. Our manufacturing sector is pretty much, as a share of the Utah economy, is pretty much equal to the share of manufacturing in the United States economy. Now, this whole distribution here is based upon these darker bars from highest to lowest. What it's saying is, and then the yellow ones are the various shares of these industries in the state of Utah compared to the national average. So the moral of this whole story is, the industries that are being hit the hardest are not our highest shares of employment in the state of Utah. Our higher shares of employment are down in here, and these are the lower shares of claims coming into the economy or being hit within the economy. So that plays to our strength also here in the state of Utah as to why our percentage of claims as a percent of the base economy is not as high as the national average. But again, take it moving forward, you're going to have, let's project out to the end of this year, out to December, you're still going to have some industries and areas that are having troubles. Business services, again, would be this, you know, you can, the temporary help industry. I think it's, again, very easy to let these workers go. The economy really has to probably pick up speed to want to bring them back. The accommodation industries is going to have some lag, you know, conventions and so on. You have to have those things planned and in place now, it seems, and a lot of those are being shut down. The food service industry, even when they open restaurants, are we all going to flock back to them? Are we all going to be comfortable sitting close together in restaurants and so on? The mining industry is basically, this is oil driven here. It's in, even if things turned wonderful overnight for everybody else, not for oil, they're having crisis as to where to put it all. They're up against such capacity restraints that it's going to take a long time for us to get back in our cars to burn that excess oil off before they need to start pumping and moving more oil again. And again, the entertainment industries and so on, other ones can make quicker comebacks and actually get back into growth modes, education, healthcare, finance, and so on. I believe that's all I have in terms of the economy. It's a very rapid and sharp hit that came in this setting. I'm going to reevaluate the growth of the economy from May forward, given possibly the initial thoughts or looks like the economies might start to get back open in May. When I made the assumptions, it was predicated on them being pretty much closed down till the beginning of June. So we can make some tweaks here, but again, you're going to end up with something like an overall effect like this. Again, maybe not that depth right there, but this will be the depth, and then we'll turn it and start working our way back up again without a W effect happening, which could very easily happen if COVID comes back again in the latter part of this year when we get back into fall, winter, and so on. We'll see how that plays out. So I'll take any questions,
comments. There were three questions that came into the chat box.
Okay.
I don't know if you want to stop and read them or I can read them to you, but Dina Blaze asks, can you indicate which sectors have the largest segments have claims considered jobs, a job attached?
Say that again.
So which job sectors have the largest claims considered, quote, job attached, that have unemployment claims, I think is what she was getting to.
This.
Yep. Which sectors have, I don't know if job attached, so it's the food sector and accommodation, okay.
Yeah, accommodation and food services is gonna have your largest loss. Again, some of these are unclassified, but healthcare was surprising. So was retail trade, the administrative support. Again, some of these other slides show the same thing, these disproportionate shares, 2.5 times the amount of initial claims that you would expect given its share of the base economy. So again, if it was 5% of the economy, you'd think it would be 5% of claims, but instead it's not, it's 253% higher, 200% higher. And a lot of these are industries that are very social interaction based, whereas a lot of these other ones you can get away with isolation and doing things with technologies and so on. So the personal interaction industries are the main ones that are taking the hit.
Okay, and then thank you. Mayor Dandoy has a comment and sort of and a question about workforce services. It says, although not many claims would normally be counted, the cities and counties are not hiring seasonal employees at the same rates over previous years. Shutdown of summer activities like aquatic centers, sporting events, parades has forced local governments to cut back hiring plans. Not sure what those impacts will be to the economy.
Yeah, we have, again, it those things are factored into this concept here where the various industries, again, I can see them being hit, but what does Lagoon do? Okay, Lagoon wasn't even open here and so on, but what used to be Lagoon employment might not be, you know, normal Lagoon employment is gonna be something that I have to scale back, and I've scaled back a lot of these industries. Again, it kind of boils down to this one. When you get to the employment change by industry out in December, you still have areas that are lagging. The entertainment industry, the mining, well, the food services, accommodations, and so on. So some industries can, I don't want to go so, I guess, you know, you could say some of them could have a V-shaped recoveries. Others are going to end up with U-shapes or L's or stair-step recoveries. There are definitely, it's not going to be equality in terms of how these various industry sectors will rebound and adjust to what's going on. And, you know, again, as he says, a lot of these summer activities, you would be putting the hiring and all that kind of stuff into place and getting the infrastructure and the labor infrastructure in place right now, and that just doesn't seem to be happening. It's being stunted.
Yep. Chris Sloan asks, can you explain what real estate rentals mean?
Yeah, that's just an industry combination that is the real estate industry, and then there's anything that is into like rental or leasing activities. These are, the national government has an industry coding structure called NAICS, or the North American Industry Classification System. And this is a definition within there where they have, but they put together the real estate industry and the rental industry. So if you're going to rent equipment, if you're going to rent cars, any kind of leasing activities and so on, they just bunch those together into that heading and title.
Okay. All right, there is another one. Paul Hacking asks, what has been the impact of the additional $600 for unemployment? In other words, to what extent have employers laid off employees because they could make more on unemployment than if they were to remain on the payroll? Was the additional $600 helpful to the economy or cause additional layoffs than we would have seen?
That's going to yet be played out, but you do see, one, to the people who get it, it certainly is a nice thing for them because the industry that gets hit the hardest here is probably the restaurant industries, and some of those are probably the kinds of people who are living off of shoestrings in various instances. And so the extra $600 is going to help them quite, you know, strongly. And so on. Will it create a disincentive? That doesn't mean the employer's not going to want to hire them back once things get better. The question is, does the person want to go back and work? And if they say no, then by definition, they should lose their unemployment because they've turned down employment. And so you'd like to, in a perfect world, that's how that would play out. But we don't live in a perfect world. We'll see how that goes. But yes, I've heard people speaking about, well, I make more money now than I did when I was working because of the unemployment and that extra $600. I don't know how long they'll keep it going and so on. But again, it probably has some form of disincentive for work. I don't think it's going to be that strong, pervasive, or powerful. But again, it shouldn't stop the employer from wanting to get employees back. If the employee says, I don't want to go back because I'm making more money, then again, they should then disqualify themselves for that money and disqualify themselves for unemployment.
I'm going to ask one more question, and then I'm going to do a follow-up to Dina Blaze in an email to you. But Sylvia Castro asks, how often is this data updated? She would be interested in seeing the trend for the next 2 months.
Well, these claims data, these I get every day, but they're not really, the story isn't changing much from day to day. A lot of these other slides, again, they would take time before they would move. The only ones that would change, again, that's April, so that's really not going to change much. That's not, it would be how this looks going forward. It could be how these, how the change in this looks going forward might translate down to the counties and what the end of December might be. But we have, I have the employment aspects and spreadsheets built. When I did do this, I'm basically showing you again, I go back to that NAICS sectors. I'm showing you what would be called two-digit NAICS sectors, which is high on the pyramid, so to speak. But I did it by making employment projections down at a three-digit NAICS level and then rolling them up. And so I did go down below this level and make estimations and build, not completely from the bottom up, that would be down at a six-digit level, but I did go down to the three-digit level and build up, and I can go back in as time goes on and new information comes in, I can make tweaks and adjustments to what I think would be these employment impacts and job losses and so on. And again, the prime example of that was, again, I did this work a week or two ago, and just this week now you're getting some signs that, well, maybe the beginning of June isn't the start of the economy. Maybe it's going to be here sometime in May. It may be reopening sooner than thought, and therefore make some readjustments because of that. But the answer, the end question is we're evaluating this as often as necessary and at least once a month, I would say.
Thank you, Mark.
Sure.
EDA funding opportunities. Scott, go quick here, my friend.
Okay, so I wanted to note to the committee that there's $1.5 billion in CARES Act funding to EDA. That sounds like a lot of money. It is a lot of money. It's nowhere near the $350 billion that SBA received, but in that, they are primarily going to be looking at revolving loan funds in order to deploy these monies quickly. We've been working with regional partners on a potential strategy to coordinate those applications, but one thing, and I'll just throw this out there, and then I'll formulate an email to the EDD, but do the EDD members have any specific needs for projects? Or regional collaboration that we could look at, there will be additional EDA money available to the economic development districts per application based on need that has much looser requirements and restrictions than standard EDA money. And you have to make a COVID-19 tie, which is easy in these times, but just think that, you know, nationally there's this money available. We're still waiting for the notice of funding opportunity, but would love to see some of these dollars deployed in our area and region for regionally supportive activities. And if you have any ideas, then please contact me, but I will send out an email to the EDD to that effect.
Awesome, thanks Scott. That sounds like a good opportunity for us to capitalize on. So certainly cross-county collaboration, which is important right now. Okay, we are going to rapid fire through item number 6, which is the roundtable discussion. We're going to start with Holland Wilbanks from Weaver County. Holland, like minute two, less than two.
No problem. Easy. So I just wanted to say that we've collaborated closely with Davis County, and you'll see Kent is on this call as well, and have worked. We've realized that if we can't open our businesses sooner rather than later, then we've got an economic pandemic along with a health pandemic. So that's been our goal as a northern region, and it's helped to work together to do that with our cities as well. I've talked to Scott extensively about the EDA program. What we found that if you don't have a lending institution already in place, which Weaver County doesn't have that, it's a little bit more cumbersome to set up. So if that's something that people have questions about, I'm happy to field some of those calls. The other thing that has been helpful to our businesses, we've taken the time to talk to them individually. There's been so much question about what you can and can't do, who's open, who's closed, when can you open, how do you open, what the health department says. So myself, along with our health department and our commission, has worked hand in glove to make sure that we're answering those questions. And I think we have a pretty good process in place. So if there's any questions that we can field or help people to understand how we've found some success in this time, you know, we're glad to share that, because we're only going to be better as a state versus just our northern region. But that's my minute of good and helpful news.
Thank you, Holland. Is Rob Sant on from Davis County? I know Kent is, but I have Rob Sant on the agenda.
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, perfect. Time is yours for a minute, Mr. Sant.
So just to echo Holland's points, we've been working together with Weber County. Something specifically that we've been working on at Davis County is we've been working on a recovery plan that has about 15 to 20 steps for us as economic development, but also tourism, on things that we could focus on to try to move the stabilization phase as quickly as possible. Obviously working with our health department to make sure we're doing it safely. But that's kind of the main thing we're focusing on right now, is putting a COVID-19 specific recovery plan together with input from our cities and other people to try to get back to a new normal as quickly as possible.
Thanks, Rob. That's perfect. Morgan County, Mike Newton. Mike, are you on?
I am. Not a lot to report. We're, of course, part of the Weber Morgan Health Department, so we're following their lead. We have had a very low number of cases in the county. We currently have 3 open cases. We had a total of 9, and 6 have recovered. Economically speaking, you know, we do have some businesses in the county that rely on tourism, and that's been obviously hit very hard. Our ski resort has been hit very hard. But all in all, I'd say we're doing well given the circumstances.
Wonderful. Thanks for the update. Blake Thomas from Salt Lake County, are you on? Going once, going twice. Blake? Okay, doesn't look like he's there. How about Rochelle from Tooele? Sean, do you want to give an update? Commissioner Milne?
Nope, I'll pass for the sake of time. A rare gift from me to you.
Okay. Just give us a thumbs up, thumbs down. How are you guys doing?
We're good.
Great. Good to hear. All right. Thanks for that quick roundtable. Item number 7, other business. We have our next scheduled WFEDD meeting is August 3rd, 1:30. We really hope to see you in person, but if that doesn't happen, this worked really well. And who knows, by the time August hits, hopefully we've turned a corner and we're all able to meet in person. So any other things that anyone would like to say? If not, we will adjourn. We'll give it a second for anyone to say any final comments.
Abby, this is Andrew. Just real quick, I just want to say that if there's anything that anybody at WFRC can do, Scott or any of our other staff, to be of assistance to you, including helping with those connections that I think we do so well generally, but public and private connections, please do not hesitate to ask. We're here for you. And on the economic development stuff, as you all know, Scott is our point person. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks, Andrew.
Abby, this is Bob Stevenson, real quick.
Absolutely, Commissioner.
We just want to thank you from the WRFC staff and Andrew for your efforts and everything helping us out on this. You do an absolutely wonderful job, and we appreciate it.
Well said, Commissioner. I think over the next few months, as the economy, as Holland described, as the economy starts to turn back on, we'll really need to band together. Continue to look for opportunities to collaborate as we move through this in the next phase. So with that, the time is 2:41. I will look for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
So moved.
Okay, I'm going to take a first from Commissioner Milne and a second from Commissioner Stevenson. With that, we are adjourned. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much, and we'll see you in August. Stay safe.
Thanks all.